faith in ways that might get you kicked out of most churches. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
This week, we are joined by a friend that I met, and I'll talk about that in a second. But we have this week Dr. Iyeli Ichelle, who is a brilliant scholar. We're looking forward to having this conversation. This is a conversation that we've wanted to have for a while, and I just wanted to welcome Iyeli to the show. So,
welcome.
Thank you.
All right. So also got to give a shout out to Jay Garlic on Twitter for sharing us. That's a lot of shares, and it's really awesome to see that type of support. And I just want to say we see it. We thank you. And we appreciate it.
Thank you.
Iyeli and I done a different podcast, actually, around the show Lovecraft Country, which aired on HBO last year. And the show was part of a group, an online Facebook group called Black Brilliance in Arts and Entertainment. And we were kind of, I don't know how to call it. Like we talked, broke down the show, different themes in the show, Easter eggs and things like that. It was on YouTube. It was really well received. It's a big group of people. And we had fun digging into Lovecraft Country, which is a beautiful text for Black life in America. And so, I was like, Iyeli is the perfect person to have a conversation that we're going to have today. All right, so we're talking about hoodoo. Now, growing up in Black church, you would always hear hoodoo and voodoo at the same time because Black church likes to rhyme, and they rhyme, and so they would always occur together, just like trials and tribulations and things like that. Like, you never have tribulations without trials or trials without tribulations. Like, they got to be next to each other. And so... hoodoo and voodoo seem to always occur next to each other, but they're not the same thing. And so eventually, just part of my studies and just natural curiosity started to look more into it. And I was like, wait a minute, this is something that I already know. This is something that's familiar. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're going to discuss today. So, Iyeli, why are these two things confused, do you think?
Well, outside of the rhyming thing, hoodoo with an H is something that is a tradition that is uniquely like a North American expression of African spirituality. And then you've got vodou, which originates in Haiti. But then you've got voodoo, which is really a tradition that in the 1790s, those French slaveholders try to run away from the Haitian Revolution and take their enslaved Africans with them. They are invited and given land grants and safe haven in places like Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And so the Africans that they bring voodoo to Louisiana. And it, you know, just, it's like an anglicized way of saying voodoo, which is a religion. Like, so voodoo is just voodoo, but on the American, North American continent. But you still, once they got to Louisiana, there was something called hoodoo that was
voodoo that they ran into.
Right. And then it gets even more complicated because one of the things I'm arguing in my research is that voodoo, the way people talk about it, like kind of in a derogatory way or in the church, what we think of as voodoo, this kind of scary, superstitious, you know, voodoo dolls and all that, I think that is a whole other construct. I'm arguing that there's something called the American voodoo construct, where we use it as a way of saying everything that is African and unfamiliar is bad and demonic. And that type of voodoo has its own category, because most of that is not actually based on reality, or certainly not an African reality or a Black reality. So I think that's like it's almost like voodoo has two personalities. There is real Louisiana voodoo, and then there's like the fake stuff.
Okay. So in the hoodoo conversation, let's talk through how this was birthed, what conditions led to the creation of this spiritual practice of, at the time, enslaved Africans. And let's get there. So how do we start here with hoodoo? Or what is it?
What is it, right? Yeah. So there's a little bit of a debate going on, but I would say it's a historical religion. I think at a certain moment in time, maybe the latter half of the 1700s, early half of the 1800s, it was a fully elaborated religion with all of the components people believe a religion must have. And then shortly after that, with the Civil War, emancipation, the Reconstruction era, and Black people shifting and moving in new ways, hoodoo really becomes a belief system, definitely, but less cohesive as a religion. So it's still a spiritual tradition. It is a belief system that wraps itself around notions of healing. And by healing, we mean balance. right? Bringing things into balance one way or the other, creatively or destructively into balance. It's a spiritual belief system that revolves around the concept of empowerment for Black people and basically kind of using practical skills and spiritual force to kind of meet certain goals to bring things about.
When enslaved Africans began to arrive in the United States, they brought with them their religious practices. That's one of those things that they could bring. I mean, you don't have resources and you know, possessions and things like that, but you bring who you are. And who you are is, you know, who you believe. And so you have West African Muslims coming to the country. You got African traditional religions coming to the country. And so you come with your religion.
Yes.
But then you figure out new ways to exist. And so hoodoo becomes this way of, as Yelly said, like healing and bringing balance, also providing protection from your white enslavers. It's a way to control things that you don't control. And if you consider how many things that were out of their control, this is a reclamation of power. This is a way to say, all right, these are the things that we can do. I can heal this way, or we can protect ourselves using this conjure. Or those are things that the slaves held, and they were important to the survival of our ancestors, because it allowed them to reclaim that power and obtain things that they could not attain and achieve otherwise.
We wouldn't be here without it. None of us. Honestly, yeah, it is, like you said, it's an amalgamation of all of these different African traditions that we brought over with us, our spiritual beliefs, our religious cultures. We had to find a way to like get the most potent parts of them, the most durable parts of our religious beliefs from home. Okay, you all do baths in a river. We do too. You all speak certain words in a certain cadence to make this happen. So do we. What do we have in common? And then there's the plant animal life, the native people of this land, the indigenous folks had to kind of say, okay, you know, we had to go to them and say, okay, what reduces a fever, right? Yeah. Like what y'all got? We got this back home. What y'all got? You know what I mean? And so there's a mixture of things. But then under Protestantism, which is different from the Catholic colonies, right, of the Spanish and the
French. Yes.
Under Protestantism, which is very much kind of a more minimalistic tradition, very austere compared to like the ritualistic metaphysics of the Catholic Church that provides lots of hiding places for African spiritual practice. So with African traditions, you know, whereas, you know, they may have had specific African terminology for things, African names for things. Some people say, you know, hoodoo represents the death of the gods, right? I think Albert Rabateau said that. But the African gods didn't die. The divine forces of nature didn't die. They just, you know, we called it lightning now. We called it the river now. We called it thunder. You know, the English language that was imposed on us, we used that terminology to describe forces that we were already familiar with.
That's interesting, that connection between the American indigenous and the enslaved Africans. I love that there was almost a community building element to the practice that, especially in the Southeast United States, like Georgia, where
in Florida,
where you would have to learn or relearn what works in this, what fauna and flora are you able to use to produce the results that you are familiar with. Like, you know, you need to heal this stomach issue, but you don't know this plant. And so to be able to have a resource there. Now, this is not like, it wouldn't be documented in a way that we're used to doing it. The documentation for this type of interaction is the existence of the similarities between the two practices. So you would see in Native and Indigenous healing a similar root combination that you would in hoodoo. And so this information ends up being passed down. And so it doesn't matter if you are, let's say, an official practitioner of hoodoo. All you know is on this plantation, you go to this person to heal, and this thing is given to you to heal. And so that becomes the wisdom that ends up being passed down. And it's a beautiful system of reclaiming agency for the people who need it, but then also starting to amass this body of knowledge that becomes part of your culture. And it ends up becoming part of our culture, whether we realize it or not. It's your elder wisdom. It's the things that you know you should be doing. And some of it you know, may have been dismissed. But the reason why we're having this conversation is because I think we're at a critical point where the mainstream religions have been so loud about what they believe and what should not be believed that those pieces of wisdom that have sustained us, sustained our ancestors, are at a point where they could be lost because it's oral tradition. And your grandmother and your great grandfather, you know, they pass away. If no one checks and asks, you know, what were those things? Then how do you know those things?
Right.
And we're at that age now where we have grandparents who are familiar with things, whether they, again, whether they were practitioners or not, they still know. And we don't want to lose that knowledge.
We don't. And people are out here really trying to collect it. I always recommend a book called Working the Roots by Michelle E. Lee, which is really so heavily oral history. Even in the group that we did on Facebook, Mike, you know, there was a whole thread about just cooking. You know, people not having people to teach them how to cook, but there's so much wrapped up into cooking that is hoodoo, you know, putting the healing in the food and checking your energy before you cook to make sure you don't transmit your sadness or your upsetness to anybody else in the family. All these, you know, what happens when you spill some salt? We all know it. We just don't remember why we do it. Like you throw the salt over your shoulder, right? Like these things that we call superstition, a superstition, I think Louisa Teich says this, a superstition is just a spiritual practice whose meaning has been lost through time. We just forget why we do it, but we're obedient to it anyway, if we're wise, right? And I think what you're saying, Mike, really brings up or implicates our relationship with our elders and our ancestors. Like, are we respecting their, are we really honoring what allowed them to survive? Are we honoring the knowledge that enabled us to even get, you know, to exist? Are we disrespecting them in some way by kind of discrediting what they believed in? You know?
Right. A lot of it is a misinterpretation of what that presence of their knowledge is compared to a more mainstream knowledge, because it's almost like it's very easy to wipe it away. We see that not only do the oral traditions help when you're talking about us interacting or our ancestors interacting with indigenous people, I think that the thing that bonded them was this mutual danger from this system that's being imposed and enforced on top of both of them. So it's almost like the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So there was an opportunity that was definitely taken for us to not only exchange the information, but in that exchange of information, that's a resistance. So when people say, how can it be lost? It can be lost if you don't understand how revolutionary it was for us to have it in the first place, because we're constantly, the messaging is crazy. Words mean things. So I've seen where people have gone back and said, the Africans themselves were not slaves per se. They were all of these things and removed from their land and put into a system of enslavement. They had to behave a certain type of way. So these types of reclamations of how we do, what we do, and with what purpose has definitely been misconstrued as a danger to the structures that keep us, you know, oppressed. So it's not even so much that we've forgotten, but it's that we were almost feeling fearful of learning it in the first place. You know, you get a chance, you're the first in your family to go to college, or you're the first in your family to go to medical school. You might make a mistake to minimize that your, you know, five-time great-grandmother was the medicine woman in her community. And how her example and how her heart and her knowledge is enforced in you. And that's why you're attracted to medicine in the first place, but you're learning it through this different lens. I think a lot of people overlook that. You know, we have a tradition of elders listening to problems and coming up with solutions and decisions, how families are going to conduct themselves, how owners of materials are going to share or split proceeds or compensate one another. You're thinking you went to law school because you're smart, but you don't realize that that tradition is in your rooting, and it bubbles. It can't. It's almost like it can't be denied. I come from a cooking family, so what you're saying about food is so important, because I've seen that lead to hospitality and lead to the opportunity to be able to give care, because I've satisfied a need in you. I've fed you, and now you trust me. And now we can have conversations over coffee or over the cake. Okay. So we're making, you know, these things make sense, but they're not accidental. They are so intentional. And part of that reclamation is making it legitimate. It has to be legitimate in our eyes, because sometimes we are the ones who carry the message of delegitimizing these things. Oh, it's not important. You know, it is important. Yeah. It just because it's ours doesn't mean it's not real or it's not factual.
So that's a key point. So we've talked so many ways over the show, the course of the show. So we had a show about basically how a singular religious identity is imposed on people, and usually colonized systems of religion force a singular religious identity. And in Christianity, for West Africans, what happened is those enslaved Africans did not adhere to that the way that they presented. So you would be presented with something like Christian baptism, and the African tradition would be the rebirth through the water. And so it would be like, oh, okay, we can understand that, or we can say, you know, we can go along with this. You would have the symbolism, the iconography of a cross, and the cosmogram, you would have that same symbol. And we'd be like, okay, we know what we're doing there. So those things were things that were presented to us and kind of subverted to make something else. But hoodoo is ours. That's an important reason why we're having this conversation. It was something that was created for us, and it was created by us to sustain us. And it has done. It's worked. And what you're saying, Amir, is so important about legitimizing and delegitimizing. Like, I'm a gamer, so it's not uncommon for me to be playing a role-playing game, like, say, for instance, Elder Scrolls, you know, Link, Breath of the Wild, you know, World of Warcraft, something like that. Uh-huh. And there'll be a crafting system in the game. And the crafting system is very intentional. Like, you'll take Nightshade and Hyacinth or Elderberry and whatever. And everyone accepts this as part of the game. And most gamers are white men. And it's not an issue to understand that this crafting system works and this is how you make your potions and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's legitimized that way. But we've done this. Like, we've done this the same. And this is, they're taking, I guess, beliefs in healing herbs and combinations from, let's say, Gaelic cultures or things like that.
Right,
and
they have their own.
Right. Everyone has it. And so do we. It's important for us to understand that, yes, that's a way, that's a mode of existence. It's effective. It is legitimate. Mm-hmm. And we have something that is ours that we have ignored for far too long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's this almost this something's in the air these days where really all of the indigenous folks and indigenous traditions of the world are really kind of experiencing some re-examination, some re-engagement. Yeah. People really trying to go back and claim their ancestral traditions, whether they know it consciously or not, or they're kind of just kind of toying with the idea, doing it in these kind of subconscious ways, through fantasy, through gaming, through whatever. There is a reclamation process going on. And I really love to see it because it is ours. Like, I think so many Black Americans in particular feel like all we have is, like, I don't know, soul food and some cuss words. I don't know. It's just so reductive. And I'm like, no, you have this whole tradition and you're practicing it all the time without even really knowing it. And it's crisis mode African culture. Like, it's the thing that gets you through. Like, it's the thing. And I think that that's the beauty part, that they, I mean, they had to make it so invisible, so innocuous, so organic to how we move through life. And that's so African. Like, most African languages don't have a word for religion separate from this is our way of life. So hoodoo is a way of life. But, like, you know, now we're in a position where we can examine it and say, yes, this is a thing. It is systematic. It is reliable and it belongs to us. So, yeah.
That brings to mind the example. I mean, Mike knows I love Beyonce. However, that brings to mind the example of the lemonade presentation, because so many people were just overcome with the imagery. You know, the sis does visuals. You don't have to like how she sings or anything, but the visuals were so powerful. Mm-hmm. The connection back to New Orleans. New Orleans is one of my favorite regions in the country to study because of how African it is and how that has not been diluted across time. But when you say it's crisis mode, like, Lemonade was about the breaking down and the rebuilding of a relationship. And if you watched the collection of videos in the order that it was presented, it was a reclamation of the emotion that allowed us to access different parts of healing and restoration. So mm-hmm. we don't get to forgiveness without her anger. We don't get to her anger without uncovering and accountability. Right. But the way that it was presented, the fact that it was very woman-centered, that resonates with us more in our ancestors historically. Dare I say, you know, sometimes Christianity, what we suffer with in the church right now is the fact that traditionally women are in control, are in power, are in the lead. And the in this Americanized or this Westernized system, sometimes that is not always accessed or fulfilled or lifted up or championed. So there's tension there because mm-hmm. we behave a certain way within our community that is not always represented in our institutions or what should be our institutions. And when we begin to question that, you know, for lack of a better term, we're shaking the table because we've tapped into something that says that you want me to believe that it's this way, but it feels better and it makes more sense this other way. Mm-hmm. And we're making that make sense, you know, and in making that make sense to ourselves, we've realized that we come from faith traditions where the women were leading the call and response, where we were the ones who were intercessing and being the prayer warriors. And mm-hmm. like you say, we were known for bringing a certain amount of value to any sort of community transaction or community communication.
Yes.
So it's like we're writing the course as opposed to doing something, you know, so completely new. It's a return. It's not a new thing. Yes. It's a return to.
And let's not forget, Lemonade was also done against the backdrop of Hurricane Katrina and the restorative process that had to happen after that as well. So that's, you know, the broader crisis mm-hmm. going on where, you know, you've got the broad crisis of people of African descent. Then you've got the individual crisis of her really examining her relationship. Right. And herself. And yeah, so, and I think this is important because women are culturally, traditionally the medicine carriers. We are the ones who tend to be in power and leadership positions within these traditions. It's not to say men are not, obviously. Both in it together. But there is way more space for women to exist and to feel power and control, because Hoodoo practitioners are not just doctors, you know, community doctors, so to speak, or healers, but they're also civic leaders. You know, they mm-hmm. have a lot of authority. That's why a lot of our lead Black leaders today tend to be from the church or from spiritual realms, because you got to have that spiritual authority to be able to lead us anywhere. You know, mm-hmm. we need to trust something higher
the
than
bona fide. You. Accountable
to something higher than yourself. So. Right. Yeah, all of those things.
Yeah, we try to just bring up the examples that people see that they might not have processed, because mm-hmm. not for nothing, you know, yes, that's ultimately a reflection of pop culture. But even when Solange's projects came up and just how centered we were and how her presentation was even that much more different. But you get into what they say their family is rooted in, and in that Southeastern Texas, Louisiana area, how their and their affinity, their alignment with the Catholic Church, where you said there's so many places for these practices to hide out in plain sight. I think that they did an excellent job using their platform and their recognition to bring some of this forward. They're not the only ones by any means, but they are very recognizable people. I don't think it's a coincidence that they are sisters who grew up in the same house, rooted to the same family, and how their acknowledgement of their spirituality looked in the reflection of their art. It's something that, you know, the Lemonade syllabus, I think it is, where all the Black women professors came and put books behind the imagery. And what did they do? They legitimized it. They said, this is more than just music. This is more than just an album. These young ladies just showed you what we've been on, you know, especially in this area where all of that could be overlooked by Mardi Gras. All of that could be overlooked by, oh, I went to New Orleans and enjoyed Bourbon Street, you know. But did you know that you were in one of the most spiritually connected regions in the country, if not the world, because of what it was to our ancestors and interacting with indigenous people in that area?
This has always been a part of the Black culture in America. Zora Neale Hurston writes a lot about hoodoo practice. Even like, so I'm a musician and I'm a gospel musician at one point, which is heavily influenced by the blues, which is heavily influenced by hoodoo practices. Like that's just part of it. And so like you would take a let's say a practice like a track gathering. Mm-hmm. So track gathering was basically a way of conjure that would, so basically like you would take the tracks of someone and you would either gather them and bury them or gather them and conjure in that spot. And so what you would see, what that translates to is like a lot of grandparents and things like that would sweep up at the end of the day. And I remember seeing when I was young, seeing like, why are they sweeping up the dirt? Like, why are they sweeping up? It's not like a linoleum floor. Like they're sweeping up like land and ground. And it's because of this belief that you want to make sure you clear those tracks so yes. that no one can come and conjure
grab that dirt
behind you.
That's right.
Right. Grab that dirt and do. And so even like in a blues song, Howlin' Wolf, some of y'all remember from Cadillac Records was the name of the movie. And Howlin' Wolf was the guy that sang Smokestack Lightning and stuff like that. But he also had a song called Tail Dragon. And the song was like, I'm a tail dragger. I sweep up my tracks is the lyric. And basically he's saying, you know, at the end of the day, I'm covering my tracks. You're not going to get me. These are the things that make it into pop culture, and they have for the whole time. And to see that continue through the examples that you gave, Amira, it's something that's always been with us. It's there. It's in our literature. Mm-hmm. It's in our music. And it's there in a way that, like you said, it's subtle. We wouldn't be aware of it unless you know, mm-hmm. unless you know the code.
Yep, I look forward to us like really thinking, seeing that and making that kind of thing more visible. And I think that also kind of brings to mind the matter of protection, self-protection that you raise. I think unfortunately when a lot of people think of hoodoo, they think of like hexing somebody, casting spells on somebody, taking someone's dirt.
Yeah, like, doing something to somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, doing harm to people, doing harm to each other, really, you know, trying to force a man to be with you, you know, all these other things. But I think these are really kind of newer expressions of hoodoo. But if you really read them backwards through time, you understand why there might be anxiety about a partner leaving you, why, you know, what kind of financial and emotional instability that can cause, particularly during slavery. You know, like maybe we pick up people's dirt from their tracks to keep them with us so they won't be sold away, right? So there are origins to these kinds of things. You know, certain protective rituals and things like that you might do. You know, slavery was a crisis. It was a dehumanizing crisis. So your reproductive rights and your sexual rights to your own body were taken from you constantly. You know, the right to raise your own children, to keep your partners with you, to not be starving all the time, medical care. If you wanted to be seen by the guy who, you know, tends to the sick horses and cows, okay. Or you could deal with your own traditions, your own healers, right? So all of this was about addressing illness, injury, and various forms of social loss and personal loss. And so now when we think about like hexing, and we always think about hoodoo being directed at other Black people, but ultimately it was directed externally to protect ourselves from the assault of slavery. And then post-slavery, the extension of those same ways of controlling and oppressing us. That's important to note, I think.
So I was reading a book on hoodoo medicine, and just looking at the remedies that they had, I was amazed. And it's important to see these things in context. So you'll take something like fennel, which we know if you cook or eat a lot, you know, fennel is a laxative, but it's also, in hoodoo, it was used as a prevented contraception or it induced abortion, which is important during that time when you are being raped and forced to breed and bear children that are not your own. You would need remedies like this. And so hoodoo was a way, as you said, Yelly, to protect you and your people around you from all of the horrors perpetuated by American chattel slavery on us. And we needed it. If we're looking at the way we are now, like we're still not out from under the system that continues to oppress us. And so it is even more important, or continues to be important, that we retain things that protect. Now, we do have this element of understanding that grows. So science grows and helps inform. It does not necessarily negate everything that came before. Now, it may negate something. Like, you may learn some things didn't work. So you may say, well, you you can't put oatmeal on that. That's cancer. That's not going to work. Like, so you may know some things like that, but there are other things that still continue to work. Like, you can have science inform you, but that does not negate an entire belief system constructed off naturalistic remedies to real problems.
Mm-hmm. Well, mm-hmm. I think just to respond to that last point, like, you know, hoodoo practitioners, someone who would try to put oatmeal, for instance, just taking your example, on cancer would right. be someone who
that was me being exact. That's not a thing.
Yeah, I know, I get it. But hoodoo practitioners are very clear about the limitations of their practices. And I think that that's actually the sign of an authentic practitioner. It's when they say, okay, I want you to do this and we're going to do these prayers, but what mm-hmm. the prayers are going to do is bring you to the right doctor to take care of you or help you get access or be able to afford the medication that you need, right? So like hoodoo is broader and more inclusive than just like there's a herb for that. Like, you know what I mean? And I think that that's really, really important to note. It's not just a system of herbalism. That's one aspect of hoodoo. But it really is understanding how do you bring things from the universe that you need, even if that's the Western medical establishment. Because even much of what we know now in the Western medical establishment is just refiltered and commercialized indigenous knowledge, right? Yep. Like yep. even the practice of vaccines and inoculating people against illness, that comes from African women from the Gold Coast, what is now the Ghana and parts near there, that region. They mm. practice that on children, on babies during the weaning period. They would give them little inoculations, little bits of, they make little incisions in the babies during the weaning period so they can inoculate them from illnesses. That we taught them that, right? So it's interesting to see the loop. But again, because we on some level know these things, a good practitioner will be like, yeah, but you need to go get that chemo, you know what I mean?
right
you know yeah. We're going to clear a path so that you can get what you need, and that's the work, right? Not you got to come to me for everything, including, you know, come get this oatmeal.
Right. Yeah. Ayala, you said something about how this was used to guard against illness, injury, and social loss. And it brought an example to my mind of the work that Erica Bridgeforth does in Baltimore City with Baltimore City Ceasefire in a response to community violence. Mm-hmm. She tries to go out if there was a shooting or unfortunately a killing. She will set up what is like a prayer circle and an altar where that might have occurred, and leads the community in a healing and restorative practice of calling it out and trying to hold these various forces that might be at play in the community accountable for how they contribute to that loss. And a lot of people have, I won't say a lot of people, but of course, there's always a critic. There's always somebody who says that's not really helpful. But she began to try to call for ceasefires ahead of time. So instead of going to acknowledge the homicide that already occurred, she would say, we're not going to have these things happen in the community. Mm. And there's been some success. You know, we get days, consecutive days without a shooting. And in a community that is experiencing so much loss, her response is so patently different from the police or from the mayor's office or from thoroughly structured institutions. But it is recognizable that it is rooted in something else. She's ushering in a spiritual acknowledgement of how these things make us feel and how they make us think, which I've never heard it referred to as hoodoo, but it seems like it's lining up there where we're not saying, oh, the response is defund. That's not her approach. Mm-hmm. Her approach is, have we acknowledged the loss of life and the potential that we have to restore life and to make life better for those who are still here? That seems to be right in the line of what you're speaking of.
Oh, absolutely. There is a nurturing aspect. So I like to deal with the theory of modernity and like mothering that happens and the therapeutic aspects of hoodoo, right? So and that's super important because hoodoo is where Africans' humanity is grounded. We see the humanity in the people we care for, right? If we are practitioners or we are believers in hoodoo, like you got to see the human people in front of you, the human people in an institution, the human people in a community, and what human dynamics are causing the problem. Mm-hmm. What spiritual dynamics are causing the problem? Maybe there's something else going on. Maybe someone in this area who got shot, right? That's not a natural way to die, right?
Nope.
So we got to deal with that. We got to deal with the aftermath, the energy of mm-hmm. grief, the energy of anguish, the energy of anger that can, you know, rage that reproduces itself. We got to break some of these energetic cycles that are in this space, right? Like, thinking like that is hoodoo. Thinking like that is African, ultimately.
Yep.
And again, it brings us back to the question of women. It brings us back to the crisis mode culture that we're still in, right? We can't just see this as historic. We know that the criminal, you know, the carceral system is messed up, just like we know the Western medical establishment is messed up. Mm-hmm. How do we intervene in ways that make sense for us? Mm-hmm. Because the systems are there, right? Until they go away or change in some kind of fashion, how do we intervene and bring our humanity into the center where it belongs? And women are instrumental in that. Women are the midwives. Midwifery is a part of hoodoo. I think birth and death are like almost these really important markers in hoodoo practice. You know, the sacred spaces of hoodoo involve birthing spaces, the graveyard at the end, you know, that circle, the cosmology and the cosmogram that Mike was referring to before, you know, the birth and death and all the stuff in between is always implicated in hoodoo. So, you know, the morticians and the funeral directors, those people had some hoodoo stuff going on too. Those are the ones that give you your send off into the next realm or back into the other realm. So I think people who die without those words being spoken over them, they don't get their proper send off, or they're introduced under a state of distress because of medical racism or poverty or whatever. Like, we need people to reach into those situations and be human. My daughter was born with a midwife. Hey, Ebony, if she listens to this. But, you know, like, that made a difference because it was a crisis. She was born during Snowmageddon. My body was stressed out. Everything happened backwards in the procedure of how they say a birth is supposed to happen. And she was there to just hold my hand and look me in my face. And, you know, that matters, you know?
Yeah.
So, and I guess in some ways, yes, you can say that's hoodoo, but really that's if we can get to that broader understanding, hoodoo is, you know,
all African, the things.
African empowerment, African humanity in a situation. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I think that's the point of this conversation. So hoodoo has served and continues to serve as an ontological affirmation, an affirmation of being of Black American throughout the entire cycle of life. As you pointed to, it shows us who we are. Mm-hmm. It gives us the permission to be. It gives us the authority that we should have as human being. It's one of those things that was, like I said, was created by us, but it really is for us. I think about Toni Morrison, who wrote that the only grace we have is the grace that we can imagine. And mm-hmm. and one of the ways that I see that affirmation occurring, like, y'all remember in the it was in the book and the movie Beloved. Mm-hmm. There's a scene where Baby Sucks Holy is in the woods and they're having a service and everyone's dancing around in the circle, and she's affirming their existence. She's like, they don't love you. They don't love you. Look at your hand. They don't mm-hmm. love your hand. Raise them up. Kiss them. Mm-hmm. Pat them. Don't touch others hand. With them. Like, mm-hmm. love your hands. Like, this is what the system does. It says, yes, we know what your reality is, but that's not the end of it. This is who we are. And mm-hmm. regardless of who acknowledges that, we do. This is for us. This is what we do. This is who we are. And do not let anyone ever tell you anything different. Love your hands. Touch others with your hands. Mm-hmm. And so it's important to have this discussion while we still have access to the body of knowledge that's here, mm-hmm. so that we can reach out and take what's ours, take what has sustained us and kept us and will continue to not look at it as something that's lesser or other, because it's not other. We're not other.
No. We're not other. We are not other. We are asserting our reality in which we are human, we are valuable, we are beautiful, we are worthy, we are together. We are whole.
That's us.
That's us.
So, Ayeli, thank you so much for having this conversation with us. I just, let me do some resources. Do you have some resources that you want to, I guess, offer, just in case someone wants to read more about?
Sure. One of my favorite books, like I said, is Working the Roots by Michelle E. Lee. Again, for those of us who don't have our access to our elders or haven't talked to them yet, this is really a great compilation of not just actual root work recipes and things that you can use, but conversations with elders. Many, many, many. She spent, I think, the better part of 10, 20 years putting this book together. It's thick, but it's fabulous. I recommend Mojo Workin' by Katrina Hazard Donald. I would recommend Black Magic by Yvonne Chereau. I would recommend a very old article by Zora Neale Hurston called Hoodoo in America, written in 1931 in the Journal of Folklore, if you can get it. It's called Hoodoo in America. Mules and Men by Zora Neale Hurston. Tell My Horse by Zora Neale Hurston, where she really takes you to Jamaica and Haiti and brings in a comparison so you can really see the similarities and differences in these systems. And I just would encourage you to talk to the folks in your family. You'd be surprised. I'm still learning things. Like, I'm still learning things from just picking my mom's brain or, you know, talking to my aunt in Chicago. Like, what did they used to do? I interviewed my grandfather before he died about what was going on in Alabama. Tried to get as much as I could about what was going on. And I found out so many things that I enjoy and the ways that I believe I see myself as a healer come from things my ancestors have already been doing. You know, like you said, Amir made a very important point. Like, oh, I love being with people and taking care of people at my home. Why do I do that? Because my family ran a boarding house. They helped boarders, people who were unhoused, you know, didn't have stable housing. Or, you know, my younger sister works in healthcare. Our grandfather in Nigeria was a healer and a medicine man. And now she's giving out medicine to people and helping people. So it's just, you know, it's in our DNA. It's in our bloodline. We reproduce our the best of who our ancestors have been if we are careful to do so. And we make sure that we learn about them. It just empowers us to do more of the good things, you know? So those are the basic resources that I would start with.
And where can they find more about you?
I am on the internet. I teach in the Department of Social Sciences at Prince George's Community College. I'm also the director of the African American Studies Institute at Prince George's Community College. So we have a Facebook page, the African American Studies Institute. So if you do, I think on Facebook, it's AASI_PGCC.
Okay.
And it's the same thing on Instagram. And then my name. Iyeli Chile. So it's IYELLIICHILE. And that's my handle on Instagram, and Iyeli Chile is on Facebook and all those things.
Thanks again for having this conversation with us. This hoodoo is an important part of the Black religious landscape. And so we needed to have this, and I'm glad we finally did. So for Faith Uncut, I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
For more on Faith Uncut, check us out at faithuncut.com.